Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. Here on Driven to Business, we like to talk about a variety of business topics. And one of them that you cannot go very far without talking about is the topic of leadership. Here we've discussed many times parts of leadership and even things that come out of leadership, such as marketing and personnel management, and all those kinds of things. But when you boil it right down to it, leadership is a very important thing. John Maxwell, who I'll quote several times today, is very fond of saying, and very famous for saying, actually, that everything rises and falls on leadership. You know, if I go into a service station, a modern service station like a QT or a deli or a restaurant or anything, and the employees behind the counter are very friendly and very effective, and things work very well in that business, whether it's a hardware store or a restaurant, a deli, or QT, or anything else. It's very easy to say, well, they really have good employees here, and they've really done these employees are doing a good job, and that's true, they are. But what you don't understand, if you don't think about it a bit, is that's a reflection of the leadership of that organization, because they don't just luck out and hire friendly people. What they've done in there, they've led that company into a culture that's very conducive to business, and it's a culture that the employees enjoy. The employees enjoy working there, and the people that come in enjoy coming in there. All that has to do with leadership. And you know, a lot of people have different definitions of leadership. I suppose we could start first of all with just a dictionary definition, which is not particularly satisfying. But what it says is the action of leading people or an organization. Or a positional situation like the state of being a leader, like a person with a leadership position. You know, you are the foreman of some plant shift in an industrial plant. Okay, that's a leadership position. You have that, and so you are by definition a leader. And that's not only true in business; that's true in volunteer organizations such as churches and civic clubs and things of that sort. Most of us find that rather unsatisfactory, and in fact, most of us feel like there's got to be a little more to that. If we're asked to define leadership, we come up with various things. Again, going back to John Maxwell, he boiled that down. He's probably written as much on that as anyone else. He boiled that down to a very succinct little saying he has, and it's that leadership is influence, and I think that's really a great saying. I think about that a lot myself. Leadership is influence. Influence is leadership. And so if you want to be a better leader, well, then you should do a better job of influencing people. That's really what it comes down to. And we'll talk about that as the day goes on. Many of us probably grew up in thinking of leadership in military terms, either from serving in the military or perhaps watching war movies and things like that. And, you know, it's where some very strident and hard-nosed leader barks orders, and everyone jumps and obeys them. And a lot of us, I think, we almost, at least on an emotional level, we sort of think that's really what leadership is all about. And, you know, before saying anything bad about that style of leadership, there is a place for that kind of leadership, and the military is a place for it. Particularly, I should say, the military is a place for it in a combat situation. If you're part of a platoon, for instance, that's being ambushed, you really don't want the platoon leader having a meeting and seeing what everybody feels about this ambush or anything like that. You want him to bark orders, and you want people to hop to and do what's supposed to get done and get it handled. I might also add in there that you know, when these guys in the platoon, when they're taking these orders, this isn't the first time they've ever been through this scenario, and they've been trained to do it. So they all know what to do. They're trained to follow the orders, and the leader is simply executing the orders and making the split-second decisions that make a huge difference. And again, in that kind of a crisis situation, that's exactly the kind of leader that's often called for. It's not only in the military. There are occasions in business when that kind of leadership is called for. For instance, in a business facing an extreme financial crisis, you might need a very hard-nosed and a very decisive leader who is just going to step in and take sometimes harsh steps that will save the company. That's a good thing. That's not bad for someone to do that. There's another thing I think about sometimes. If you're a leader and you're facing something like sexual harassment or bullying or other improper behavior in your organization, you probably need to take very harsh and immediate steps to stop it without holding meetings, without doing anything much about it. Just step in there, give orders, and stop it. Again, those are good reasons for that style of leadership. Here's the problem with it, though. If you try to exercise that kind of leadership in situations that are not crisis situations, it's very resented. It becomes very ineffective because what happens is people begin to resent you. You come across as very arrogant, as overbearing, as not caring about the people that you're leading, and really as just sort of tooting your own horn and yelling for the sake of yelling. And we have all had, probably in our experiences, bosses and perhaps teachers and others who acted like that around us, and we all know that it doesn't work. It doesn't even work in the military outside of combat situations. I have a good friend that Wallace Miller, who's a graduate of the Annapolis, the Naval Academy, and while he was there, I talked to him once, and he was telling me about a leadership class he was in, and I actually wrote down something he told me because I thought it was pretty interesting. He said they had told him, they had a little saying in there that sailors will obey orders, but sailors follow leaders. And that is true. You know, you can have people that you are supervising or that are under you, and they will obey your orders because they have to. That does not mean they respect you or follow your leadership. It just means they are doing what they're told because they have to. People want to be led. They don't really want to be managed. Management is about ensuring that the programs and the policies and the rules of the organization are followed. But leadership, on the other hand, is much more about casting a vision and inspiring people. I love a quote from Jim Collins, who says, "The purpose of bureaucracy is to compensate for incompetence and a lack of discipline." It drives me crazy, as I'm sure it does you, to be involved in situations where you simply get rid the rule book. Now, very often, and again, I'm not going to jump on either state or the federal government, but that's usually where we run into that, our local governments. You go into everyone's had experience in the DMV where you go in there and you're waiting in line, and it's, you know, you're in line, but the closing time comes up, and they basically close the counter, despite the fact that you've all been standing there in line a good while, and tell you too bad to see you. Again, that's bureaucracy, and that is there to compensate for incompetence. That's really what it's for, and a complete lack of discipline and understanding what they're doing. Now, not all DMV offices do that. They've gotten better about it, and many government organizations are trying to get much better about that, in my own experience, even recently. Having to deal with Social Security Administration, I was actually amazed at how customer friendly this, and really astonished at how customer friendly the Social Security Administration has become, and how effective they are with using online things and the customer service they did. Now, I don't know if I had an unusual experience. I don't think so, because the systems seem to be there to make it work well. So even a large organization can do that. Now, I guarantee you that's the effect of leadership by somebody's part there. Somebody has stood up and said, this has to be done better, and they've made it happen. Because government employees, just like all employees, most employees want to do a good job. And part of your job as a leader is to be sure that you're putting a culture and systems in place where they can do exactly that. Again, leadership is about casting a vision and motivating people. You know, why would you want to be a better leader? I really could give you almost a sermon about that, about how the more wisely you use influence, the more you help other people be successful, the more you help develop other people, things of that sort, how fulfilling that is, and how much better that will make your life. But for those of you that perhaps are unconvinced, let me give you a more crass and perhaps commercial reason. The better leader you are, the more money you will make in an organization. Now, that's just the bottom line. I realize there are some of you listening that perhaps are in leadership positions in volunteer organizations such as churches and things like that. But even taking the money aside, the better leader you are, the more successful you will be in that organization at motivating people and getting the organization to go in the way you want it to go. Again, everything rises and falls on leadership, and people do want to be led. They do not, however, want to be managed. I've learned this myself. In many years, First starting our company where, honestly, I was under a lot of stress in the beginning and did not always handle things the way I should have handled it. I didn't, and although I valued people, I didn't show it as much as I should. And as a result of that, it literally did cost a fair amount of money from some of the mistakes I made. And hopefully I've learned a lot better. The whole point of leadership, I always say I'm a great student of leadership. I may not be a particularly good leader, and I certainly haven't arrived at where I should have in that area, but I'm a student of leadership. I like to watch people that are good leaders. I like to watch how they do it. Let me ask you this. Do you think leaders are born or made? And I think the answer is yes to both. There are unquestionably people who have innate leadership skills. They're just born with it. And we've all been around people like that. These are the people whose opinion just seems to matter more than other people. And it's hard to put your finger on why, but they just seem to be able to do that. But here's a dirty little secret. Innate skills are not enough. If I think back to high school, the guys that seemed to be able to exert leadership back in high school, some of them went on to have great careers. Some of them did not, because if you have to develop what you've got. You have to apply it. Just sitting, letting yourself go and depending on your ability to talk or argue yourself out of a situation is only going to carry you so far in the real world. And at some point, you're going to have to produce. And if you haven't had the discipline or the steady habits or whatever to make yourself produce, well, then you're going to be sorry about it. And no matter how much innate skills you have, it's no different than a person with innate athletic ability. They may have innate athletic ability, but if they allow themselves to get grossly overweight, don't exercise, don't practice their craft, they're not ever going to be a particularly great athlete, no matter how innate their skills, if that may be. And we've all seen people like that in the past. Here's one other quick little story about influence, and we'll talk about this a little more later. When John Sculley was the president of Pepsi, which was a huge organization, and Steve Jobs approached him and asked him to take over and be the president of Apple. He turned him down because Apple was a small company at that time. And what Jobs told him was, it become kind of a legendary pitch. He said, do you want to sell sugared water for the rest of your life, or do you want to change the world? That was the influence that put Sculley at Apple. Apple went from under him from being an $800 million company to a well into the $1 billion company. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're streaming live on biz1190.com, podcast on eddiemayfield.com. More to come. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking about leadership, the fact that leadership is influence. And I'd ask you to think back on who has influenced you in a proper way, in a positive way, I should say, and how did they do it? There may be a real secret there for you to learn about if that's how you were influenced, maybe that's how you can influence other people. You know, one of the things we all run into, any of us that have been involved in sales at all, you eventually figure this out. The biggest no-no there is of sales is to be selling to people who cannot buy your product. And that's easier to do than you might think. You know, it's very, very, very hard sometimes to get an appointment. So you take any appointment you can get, and you get in there, and you're giving it your best, you know, explaining how great your product is and trying to help them resolve problems and doing everything in your set of skills, do a great job of establishing a relationship with that customer, with that prospect, I should say, and building them up as a customer. Only to find out later the person you're talking to has no influence whatsoever on those buying decisions, and you have really just wasted your entire afternoon talking to someone just because they were nice enough to talk to you. Everybody in sales, including me, has done that at one time or another. Here's a little more sneaky thing can happen to you, though. You end up talking, once you sort of learn to get around that, you begin to ask questions early on to find out what this guy's responsibilities are and does he have the authority to do what you need him to do after you talk to him, assuming you can influence him to buy your product or service. And so you are in front of a guy that has the authority to do that. What you fail to realize, though, there is a behind-the-scenes influencer, and these people sometimes don't have titles. It may be, in our instance, we're at EMA, where we call on industrial plants, it could well be a machine operator, somebody that operates a machine, or somebody back in purchasing, or a plant engineer somewhere or something. it's a person that doesn't have necessarily a great title, and their title does not indicate they have the ability to buy from you. But they have enormous influence over the buyer. And if you don't figure that out pretty quick and go and get that person on your team as well, if you don't do that, then you're going to lose it. Again, leadership is influence. That person's a leader, although they don't have a title. And in fact, I would say, I don't know the majority, at least many people with enormous leadership influence do not actually have titles next to their name, and particularly in the society we're building today where titles are sort of falling by the wayside. In more collaborative type management situations in building, businesses and things of that sort. But again, think back to who has influenced you. What were their, what was it their skills and knowledge that gave them influence? Well, probably in the beginning, that could be what attracted you to them in the beginning. But as time went on, was it more who they were? I suspect that's the latter. It's who they were. It was their integrity. It was that you sensed in them a person that you wanted to be influenced by, someone you wanted to follow, and that's what you can do. A guy named Alan Murray wrote an article a couple years ago in the Wall Street Journal that I've had for some time. And his title of his article is in the journal was What Makes a Great Leader? And he starts off by asking, sort of in a way, the question I just asked. When you try to think of great leaders, who do you think of? Do you think of people like George Patton, perhaps in World War II? The very outspoken general who was once actually relieved of his command for slapping a soldier in a hospital? Or are you more likely to think of somebody like Abraham Lincoln? Lincoln, a quiet, thoughtful, and actually tormented man who was, from many reports, tortured almost to the edge of madness by his own doubts. We think of people like Julius Caesar years ago, a horrible dictator, but a guy that had enormous leadership influence, or perhaps in more modern times, somebody like the rather unassuming Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart. But the point is, leaders come in all types, sizes, and shapes. And so no matter what your innate personality is, you can grow to be a very good leader without becoming a person that you're not. I was offered a position some years ago. I was a service manager of a company out in Texas. And the sales department out there was in just a terrible state of disarray. And I had done a pretty good job of getting the service operation up to speed out there, and we were running pretty smoothly. And the owner of the company came to me and said, ask me if I would consider taking over the sales area as well. And I was very honored to be asked, but as I began to think about it, number one, I didn't think I had the sales skills to do it. And number two, I finally just told him this. I said, you know what you need in that position is a real tail kicker, because there's some people who need to be thrown out of the company. And I'm not the man for that. I'm not a good guy for that. And he, to my surprise, said, well, here's a problem. Neither am I. But we're going to have to hire somebody who is. And I said, yeah, I think you need to. And they actually did that and got it going later. But again, there's leadership. There's all sorts and types of leaderships. All leaders don't fit every situation, as was true with me back then in that doing. Is there a right way to lead an organization? Again, staying with Alan Murray's great article, What Makes a Great Leader, I'm going to read you something out of there. He says, if there's one strong conclusion that emerges from the best work on leadership, it's this. Great leaders exhibit a paradoxical mix of arrogance and humility. Leaders must be arrogant enough to believe they are worth following, but humble enough to know that others may have a better sense of the direction they should take, and it's in the humility department that modern leaders fail. Now, I would phrase that differently than him. Quite frankly, the term arrogance to me is a very negative term. I would have used the term confident or even perhaps driven rather than arrogance. But he is right. Jim Collins, who wrote probably one of the most influential business books of the last century called Good to Great, found in his study, to his surprise, if you've ever heard him speak or read his other writings, that the most common leadership tactic of men and women, that took organizations from being good organizations to great organizations was their humility. That was completely unexpected. And in fact, Collins, if you read some behind the scenes things that he wrote, he sent his researchers back and said, this can't be true. He sent them back out and look at it again. But it was. But we all know people that have absolutely failed in this area. Again, in this article, what makes a great leader, Alan Murray points out that Carla Fiorina, when she was the CEO of Hewlett Packard, had her picture stuck between the two founders of the Mr. Hewitt and Mr. Packard. She had her picture put there. It was greatly resented in the company. And one of the criticisms of her was that she spent too much time building her own reputation and her own success, and the company suffered as a result of it. Another guy that the Wall Street Journal actually did a complete profile on, a guy named Joseph Golly. Golly worked for 19 years at Black & Decker, and finally he was forced out, and he had offers from both PepsiCo and Amazon, and his tenure at Amazon when he got hired only lasted 13 months. And he was criticized for cutting staff. Like, Golly was a hard driver, but he was seen as driving his own destination and not leading an organization to a goal. And Golly later conceded that he often lacked diplomacy. Again, these are leaders. These are the kind of guys that you might think make great leaders, but because they lack this element of humility, they don't. They don't make it. And here's why I think that is. We'll talk more about this after the break. I think that a lack of humility, one of the things that you must be to be successful in anything in life is you need to be a lifelong learner. And if you don't have humility, if you're arrogant, or as Jim Collins says, if you exhibit, as he says, the number one way to start failing, the number one step is to have hubris born of success, which basically is saying arrogance brought on by your success. You've been successful doing this in the past. Therefore, you get the idea that somehow you have a Midas touch. You know how to do everything. You stop paying any attention to people around you. You stop paying attention to what they say, and you stop learning. And that's the seeds of your destruction. And that is what a lack of humility does in a leader. All of us have to fight that. And the ones of us that are the most successful are probably the ones that have to fight it the most, because the old saying, the bigger you are, the harder you fall. That's true for every single one of us. Again, you're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's WAFS Biz 1190. Streaming live on biz1190.com, podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and on iTunes. And we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the second half of Driven to Business. Glad you're here. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Biz 1190. As I keep reminding people, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Talking today about leadership, and I'm trying to do most of this in a fairly encouraging way. You know, I've quoted Jim Collins many times. I've quoted him a couple of times already. I also want to give you a couple of Jim Collins quotes that I think are fairly famous quotes that most of you will know. One of the quotes that Collins is most famous for saying is that good is the enemy of great. And almost all of us have had to face those decisions. You know, a lot of times decisions we have to make about whether to pursue this angle or this angle in business, whether to chase this product or this customer or market this way or that way, it's not a matter of one is terrible and one is great. It's a matter of that there one is good and one is great. And the good, therefore, can become the enemy of the great, because we will see that as being good, and we will say, okay, and be satisfied with only the good while letting the great slip by us. And I think that's his main point there. He also says that a culture of discipline is not just a principle of business, it's a principle of greatness. Leadership requires some discipline. You have to develop. You have to invest in it. I enjoy investing in things. I have mainly invested in my own business, but I also invest early on in our business. I decided I lacked the skills to do what needed to be done in our business. I invested in myself. Some of it cost a lot of money to train myself to be a better leader, to hire better people that were better leaders, and to hire people that were smarter than I was. And I've been able to do that, and had better leadership skills than I had. And we've had a lot of success at EMA because of that. And my story is not unique. People that do that find a great deal of success simply by by being disciplined. It's not just a principle of business. It's a culture of greatness. you know, that bad intentions, bad decisions made with good intentions are still bad decisions. You know, it doesn't matter what we may think about it. But we also, another thing he writes that I sometimes remind myself of, and I'm just going to read this quote to you right here. For no matter what we achieve, if we don't spend the vast majority of our time with people we love and respect, we cannot possibly have a great life. That's for those of us perhaps are tempted to overinvest in success and business to the detriment of relationships and the detriment of what becomes really important in our lives. Those are things we simply must learn how to do. So going back to the article in the Wall Street Journal by Alan Murray, what makes a great leader? He says they need both drive. He uses the term arrogant. Again, I would change that. They need both the confidence to succeed and to encourage others to follow them, and they need the humility to understand that others may have a better idea about where the company should go than they do, and they need to listen to it and get that done. John Maxwell, who's probably written more on leadership than anyone else, has come up and defined five levels of leadership. I first read this in his book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, and it's had a lot of influence in my life in the way that I think about leadership. Some of you may know we've had his co-writer, who's all of a sudden name has escaped me here, Charlie Wetzel. Charlie Wetzel on our program here twice, and Charlie was Maxwell's co-writer, a very interesting guy, lives right here in Atlanta, and helped to write Maxwell's books. Again, what I think, if you want to read one leadership book, I would encourage you to go get The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. It's one of the best books on leadership I think ever written. It's kind of getting some age on it now, but those principles don't change. But Maxwell defines five levels of leadership. I want to talk to you about, I'm just going to use his and talk to you about them a little bit. The first one he talks about is sort of the bottom of the rung, is the leadership level of position. That's when you're given a leadership position. You know, I am the chairman of this committee at church. Okay, whatever. That means I have, that's not to disdain that either. That does mean I have responsibilities, and I have leadership responsibilities because I have accepted that position. In your company, if you're given a title, you're the shift supervisor, or you're the personnel manager, or you're the whatever title you have in your company, it does denote responsibility, and you should live up to that responsibility. You need to do what you're told to do. But you should also understand that is the lowest level of leadership. A title is the lowest level of leadership. And every one of us in our lives have run across people who had titles but were miserable leaders, miserable at it. In fact, very often they end up being removed from those positions because of that. But again, it's the lowest level of it. Your influence in this position will not extend, if this is all you do, your influence will not extend beyond the lines of your job description. And the longer you stay in that position, if that's all you are, if that's all you're depending on is to be a leader in a company, all you're depending on is your position and your title, the longer you stay there, the less effective you will be, the higher your turnover rate will be, and the worse the culture in your company will be. You have to grow beyond that. The next level Maxwell talks about is what he calls permission. It's more to me, I think of it in terms of relationships. This is where you begin to build relationships with people. And people follow you beyond your title. They care about what you think because they have a relationship with you. And this level allows work to start being a little bit of fun. Instead of just telling people what to do, you're encouraging them. They're doing it because they have a relationship with you. They learn to like you. They learn to trust you. And as a result, they follow you. The next level up is what he calls production, which another term you could say, this is the results level. This is when your leadership begins to be measured in results. And this is where the fact that you are a good leader, if you're able to do this, begins to be noticed by other people. And they begin to attach themselves to you because they see you as a person. Number one, you have the position, you have the title, you have relationships with them, and they sense that you're a person can make things happen. You're learning how to get results. Now, you know, the bottom line in a lot of businesses is results. One of the things that I like the least of having a leadership position in a company is when we have to terminate someone. And there's a whole other program about how to do that, and you certainly don't do it arbitrarily or quickly or anything else. I mean, you be sure you're doing the right thing when you do it, both for you and for that person. And you got to be sure you've given them every opportunity to improve in whatever areas you are sensing a lack of performance in. But for you, if you have a leadership position and results are not coming in, then it's you who perhaps are not doing your job in a position, because overall we eventually have to produce. And you know what's really scary about that? If you are the CEO, if you're the founder of a company and it's grown to a certain level and it cannot grow anymore because of you, then maybe it's time you thought about stepping aside and letting someone else run that company, even though you founded it. And again, that's where humility really gets tested. Are you humble enough to step aside and say, you know, I've got us to this level. I don't have the skills to get it higher. And you let somebody do it. You know, at this level, problems get fixed with very little trouble because of momentum. You've got momentum going. Things work out. The next level is people development. And this is a very enjoyable place to be. This is where long-range growth occurs, not some short-term growth, but long-range growth. And the reason is you're helping people to develop to be what they want to be what they can be. They find you as someone that's giving them opportunities. They're allowed to grow. They're allowed to make mistakes even under your leadership. They're allowed to grow, find their own way. And this is where people actually literally begin to love you. The fact that you develop them and you're ensuring long-term growth. You need to do whatever you can do to achieve and stay at this level. This is a great level to be in. And the fifth level Maxwell talks about is an even higher level, and he calls it personhood. And he makes the point of, and I think I would agree with this, that there are very few people get to this. This is where living legends live. This is where people like Truett Cathy live, and Jack Welch, and Abraham Lincoln, and people like that. This is where people who follow you will follow you simply because of who you are. You have so much respect. People want to work for you. They want to be around you. They listen to what you say just because of who you are. Again, that's not somewhere you get overnight. You have to develop that, and that's a great goal to strive toward. A lot of us are not going to make that. And the people development level, the one level below that, is a great place to spend your life. You're a huge success if you spend your life there. But if you want to get in rarefied air, then you move up into this personhood, because it's simply you as a person. You, not the company, not necessarily the achievements that are going on a daily basis, but you are who they want to be around. And that is the people that do that simply become bigger than life. And again, we can think about people that are able to do that. So that's the five levels that Maxwell has there. And what I would caution, I always caution somebody, you know, it's very common for someone in your first position in leadership. You know, the first time I ever got that was when I was in the Coast Guard as an enlisted guy. You get appointed what we called watch leader, and you have like six guys that are sort of reporting to you. And they didn't do a lot of training for us in that area. And so what you sort of did was what you saw other people doing. Well, fortunately for me, I was around some people that handled that pretty well. But, you know, there were people that start immediately bossing people around and bad-mouthing people and just sort of being very abrupt with their authority. And you sort of had to take it because they are over you. But, you know, you don't want to hang around them at all after hours when you're off duty. You don't respect them, because a lot of these cases I noticed, these are the people that complain the most bitterly about how they were being treated by higher-ups. And all of a sudden they get promoted to position, and they're worse than any of those people they were complaining about. Again, that's when you let positions go to your head. If you have a title or a position, that's fine. Live up to the title. Do what you're supposed to do. If you're supposed to be in charge of something, then for goodness sakes, take charge. There is nothing so annoying as someone who accepts a leadership position and then won't lead. It drives you crazy. If you're a leader, you know that old Marine thing, in every situation, determine who's in charge, and if nobody's in charge, take charge. That's the sort of the whole philosophy. It's very annoying to be under anybody's leadership who will not accept it and lead, and who just will not make decisions, keeps asking everybody. You've all been in situations like this where they just keep going around a circle asking for opinions. They won't shut off the discussion when it's long past time for it to be shut off, and they just will not stand up and make a decision. They will not accept their leadership position. Don't be like that. On the other hand, don't take that position and think it makes you anything. You know, you were not if you were not a leader yesterday and you got a position, well, you're not much better of a leader today. It's a place to start. It's a start. Do the best you can there. But begin working your way up this ladder, up to relationships and up to results, up to people development. And finally, for some of us, or some of you perhaps, go up and achieve this highest level of personhood. One more segment to go. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We've been talking about leadership. I hope it's encouraging to you. Let me say again in the beginning, I don't want to come across as any kind of arrogant know-it-all. I am a good student of leadership, and I would stop there. I probably made every mistake in leadership could be made by anyone. And fortunately for me, I have had some good influences around me and some people who were careful enough to tell me. And I've also at least been smart enough in business to hire people who are very intelligent to work around me and with me. And that is the great secret to our success in my life, business success, and not any of my own brain power. I can tell you that. During this last segment, I want to start with something. And it's actually written by a lady named Liz Ryan. And I took this out of Business Week magazine some years ago. And it's called, I have a title, I have a note I wrote myself. It's called Insulting Leadership. And what she says, here are five of the most insulting leadership practices that will virtually guarantee failure as your business. So let me give you some of those. We've been trying to talk encouraging talk all along. I'm still going to do it in that tone, but I want to give you things to just, and perhaps you can think of the other side of this, and it'll still sound rather encouraging. Here's number one, according to her. If you desire a mediocre workforce, make sure your employees know you don't trust them. We've all been in situations where we did not feel trusted by our boss. And it is insulting. When employees know they're not trusted, here's what happens. They become experts at just the physical appearance of working, or as Liz Ryan calls it, the presenteeism. Basically, they're present but not working. My first experience with that kind of situation was in the Coast Guard. When I first got in there, there were some guys who had been in a while. I often wondered why they had never been promoted to anything, because I actually was promoted a little bit higher rank than them, and I had been in as long as they had. And then I would find things like the guy would, and he sort of brag about this, you know, he would stand there with a broom in the room and stand there all day. And whenever an officer would come by, he'd start sweeping. And as soon as the officer left, he quit sweeping. He's basically going to stay in that room and sweep all day. Well, that's presenteeism. You're present, but you're not doing anything. Well, one quick way to encourage your employees to be that way is don't trust them. Look, you selected them to join your team. Don't select people you can't trust. That's the bottom line. And once you it costs you your energy, it costs you your goodwill, and your great ideas. Here's rule number two: you want to if you want to be an insulting leader, if you want to drive talented people away, don't tell them when they shine. I don't know what it is when there are some people that just cannot bring themselves to compliment somebody else. They can't bring themselves to say thank you to people who are doing a good job. I don't know if it's a fear that little bit of praise they give is going to be met with a request for a salary increase or what. I don't know what the deal is there. But for whatever reason, leaders that can't say thanks, way to go, man, can just plan on bidding farewell to their most able team members in a short time. And you know, going back to Jim Collins a moment, we've talked about this many times on Driven to Business here. In his book, Good to Great, he brings up the analogy of businesses being a bus. And your job as the leader of that business is to put the right people in the seats in that bus. And that will determine where the bus can go, not where you want to drive it. Again, if you want to run off your most talented employees, don't praise them. And even worse, only find when they do things wrong. Just do that and watch what happens. You will absolutely destroy the team. Number three, insulting leadership practice. If you want to be, if you prefer to build a team of C players rather than A players, keep employees in the dark. Sharp employees, interested employees that are interested in your company, want to know what's going on in your company. Again, I don't know what this deal is. When you hoard information, it's a pride thing. I can't think of anything else. You hoard information so you can know it and no one else can, and somehow you think that gives you some sort of authority or respect. It has exactly the opposite situation. Top-performing people want a seat at the table. If you want to run them off, then do that. And when you run them off, what you're going to end up with are C-level players, people who don't really care. But is that what you want to do? Is that who you want on your team? C-level players, or do you prefer some A-level players? Well, then share information with them. Do not keep them in the dark. Let them know what's going on. She gives number four, if you value docility over ingenuity, shout it from the rooftops. And she has a great story here about an MBA who just joined a global manufacturer, and they told him during his first week that he needed a manager's signature to organize a meeting. Said he was too low level to call a meeting on his own because unauthorized meetings of non-managers are against company policy. Now, what that's basically saying is that the leadership team there does not want, they want their employees to be very docile and not ever have any ideas. And that's the deal. But here's the thing. Your most creative and driven people that you want working for you will not stand for being treated like children. They won't put up with it. They're going to leave you. That's the bottom line. We had Rich Russikoff on here recently, and he talked about that one of the great motivators of employees is what's called psychic income. It's even for many people more important than money. It's like psychic income. And when you take that away from people, when you basically say that I don't want you to be creative here, I just want you to stand around, follow the rules, and just be a bunch of sheep, well, you're going to end up with a bunch of sheep because all the other people are going to leave. That's what's going to happen. And number five, she says, if you fear an empowered workforce more than you fear the competition, squash any signs of individualism. We've all been in situations like that, where somebody will rise up and have a great idea, and somehow the organization thinks it's their job to squash. I go back to what Colin said earlier, that the purpose of bureaucracy is to compensate for incompetence and lack of discipline. Well, think about that a moment. When you end up with a million rules over somebody, you're going to end up, and you keep doing it in your company, you're going to end up only with people who do not want to think for themselves and who just want to follow rules. Now, think a moment if that's what you really want done. I read a book many years ago, and I can't think of the author right now, although he's a fairly well-known guy. He wrote a book called Flight of the Buffalo, and he gave an example in there of the way people used to hunt buffalo. They would just shoot the head bull, and the rest of the herd would stand around and they'd pick them all off. And his point was, if you run your organization like that when you're not there, what are your employees doing when you're not there? If they're too scared to make a move without you there, if individual thinking is absolutely discouraged by you, if you end up smacking them down for every new idea they have, well, guess what? They're going to stop having them. And when you're not there, the herd will just stand around. And the other downside of that your people that refuse to be parts of herds, the people you can really take your organization somewhere, are going to leave. And she asked a question at the bottom of the article. She says, how long do you think it will take these enterprises to figure out they're shooting themselves in the foot? She said, it doesn't matter. Because she's talking to an employee, a good employee. She says, it doesn't matter because you will be gone by then. And that's exactly right, because no good employee will hang around in that kind situation. Let's review a little bit what we've talked about today. We talked about the ideas of leadership, the idea that leadership is a lot more than a position. Leadership is not just, leadership is influence. And investing in your leadership abilities, investing in your influence, whether you're an employee of a company or whether you're the founder and owner of a company has a great deal of value. You know, Jimmy Collins wrote a book called Creative Followership, and he wrote this after being Truett Cathy's right-hand man for years, and he talked about the joy of helping another person become successful. Now, that may be your role. There's great joy, great success in that. We'll see you again next week. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You've been listening to Driven to Business. Catch the podcast of today's program on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. We're here every Saturday morning streaming live, biz1190.com. This is Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. See you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.